Welcome to the Damage Report, everyone. Today in the news, we are facing a lot. On camera, the absolutely brutal killing of Patrick Lyoya. We're gonna be breaking that down. Donald Trump admitting that he tried to get Bill Barr to take the fall over the big lie, and a new report on Dianne Feinstein's ability to do her job. Some very uncomfortable stuff there, but we're gonna grapple with all that and more. I am, as always, Johnny Derola, and I am very lucky to be joined on the show. Previously has been on the show, but not with me, so it's certainly a treat for me. Nalini Stamp, welcome to the Damage Report.
Hey, John, thank you so much for having me.
Very excited to have you on. So I believe you've done the show with Francesca before, right?
Yes, I have.
Oh, that's awesome. Amazing. Okay, so it's likely that the audience is familiar with you then. But could you tell us a little bit about your work?
Yeah, so I am the director of strategy of the Working Families Party. We are a grassroots political party that's fighting for the many and not just the few. We find, recruit, and train candidates to run up and down the ballot for office. And we're hoping to get a working families majority this year in Congress. And now, I'm super excited about the work.
I had thought that we were just supposed to wait until the week or two before the general election each cycle and then just go with whoever is presented to us there. Are you implying that there's work to be done far in advance of that day?
I mean, we could just do it the weekend of, no, just kidding. We actually have to do the work 24 hours. Well, not hopefully with sleep, 7 days a week, but it is imperative that we do it year round. It is important if we're actually gonna build a progressive majority that we need to do the work all the time and not just the weekend before the election or just in August when everybody's out from Labor Day.
Okay, you've convinced me. I think that makes all the sense in the world. And in fact, today we're gonna be talking in just a little bit about the current progressive caucus and some of what they're doing. Looks like there might be some more work to be done. So we're gonna dive into that. We're actually gonna be talking at least briefly about the Working Families Party. So everyone get ready for that. If you're on a platform that allows for the liking of videos, that'd be great. So the people know that we're live. And if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, super chats, all that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Nalini, you ready to talk about some news? I'll take that as a yes. I certainly
am. We're ready.
So anyway, let's jump into, by the way, I wanna give everyone, it's gonna be baked into it, but content warning. The video that we're about to show to you is incredibly graphic. We believe it is crucial for an appropriate understanding of the situation, but bear that in mind as we get into this.
Let go
of the taser!
How many guys
you got going?
Drop
taser!
Everyone. Get back! Get back!
What you saw in that video was a Grand Rapids police officer, currently unidentified, but protests are trying to produce an identification there, struggling with and then putting his gun to the back of Patrick Lyoya, a 26-year-old black man, and shooting him and killing him. And that's the footage that we have, thanks to someone who was recording on a cell phone. The police officer was wearing a body cam. The body cam functioned up until just before the shooting. And then for some reason stopped working. That's what we're being told. It malfunctioned at that point. Some of the rest of the incident, which we'll discuss, was captured on a dash cam. But that is just about as casual and brutal an outcome as we've seen in videos like this. Nalini, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I'm just sick and tired of being sick and tired of watching police shoot and kill and be the judge, executioner, and jury all the time. It is something that is really tragic that we've had the largest protests in the history of this country and things are still happening like this. This is 2 years after, almost 2 years after the murder of George Floyd, 2 years after Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and we still have not seen things change for us. And so I just, every time I see one of these, you know, I unfortunately feel desensitized these days, but every time I see this, I wonder when justice will actually be served. Because justice is not just about people being held accountable, it's about changing the system once and for all.
Yeah, and trying to stop, it's not just that we want justice in this case, it's we don't want right. more cases of this. And like Absolutely. You said, you're sick and tired. It's because how many has it been? How many that we Too talked many. About just on this show? And what percentage do we even get to on this show of horrible right. incidents rising to the level of tragedy of this? Well, we wanna give you more details. This happened in Grand Rapids. Is a city of 200,000 people. The population there is 18% black. And by the way, Ben Crump, lawyer who many in the audience are probably familiar with, shared a photo and some details about Patrick, saying he's 26-year-old, a Congolese refugee, showing a photo of him and saying that his family came to our country in pursuit of the American dream, but instead are now living a traumatic American nightmare as they have to bury their loved one, join their family in demanding justice. And people have been protesting to find out more about what happened and to try to get justice in this case. The videos were just released yesterday, actually. Some videos showing Patrick driving through a residential area when he's pulled over. There's a brief conversation. Patrick wants to know what he did wrong. At some point, there's the beginning of a scuffle and Patrick runs away. They grapple in a yard and the cop says multiple times, to let go of my taser. And that is when the cop makes a decision. Whether he admits to, whether he understands the decision he made was, Patrick, let's take his perspective. And let's say that Patrick was trying to get the taser. I am so worried about him getting this taser that I am now going to kill him. I am gonna put my gun to his back and I'm going to shoot. I'm not gonna hit him. I'm not gonna try to get control of the taser and use that. This is the point where I am going to execute him. And I know, like we said, we've covered so many things like this, but I cannot understand making that choice. The decision that what was a routine traffic stop now necessarily has to result in him dying.
Yes, it's so sad. I mean, in a lot of countries in the world, they only match force with force. So if somebody's trying to take a taser, you don't actually escalate with a gun or a knife or whatever it is. You meet them with hand-to-hand combat. But at the end of the day, we have just said over and over again, from the street to organizations, to institutions, from like the NAACP, all the way to movements like the Movement for Black Lives, we have said enough is enough. And it is time for real police reforms. The Movement for Black Lives has a policy standpoint that Congress could pass today. If people really, really, really wanted to actually get to the bottom of this, we would reform our criminal justice system once and for all. We will reform what policing looks like in this country once and for all. And that's what we need to do, because I do not think any of us should be proud to live in a country that can senselessly kill black folks over and over again at the hands of police.
Exactly, and we're gonna get to more details in just a minute. But just briefly, we did a story, maybe 1, maybe 2 weeks ago, about the level of police killings that had happened in the years leading up to 2020, when we had all of those protests month after month after month, and how many have happened in the years since. And there has effectively been no discernible change, despite like the largest social justice protest, the largest protest movement of our lifetimes. Mm-hmm. It hasn't seemed to have cut the violence by 10% even, let alone there have been a few cities, maybe a few states that have passed a few laws. That's good. And we only got that because of people working diligently at the local and at the state level. But what nationally has happened? What has actually changed? What do you think about now that we have a little bit of perspective, we can look back on what came of the movement. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, what I see right now is a trend to blame it on criminalization and to fund the police more. Everybody's saying, oh, well, we defunded the police everywhere. And that's just not true. Not many places actually defunded and redistributed wealth to things that we need, like education and, you know, workplace programs for our communities, or healthcare for our communities, mental health care for our communities. We have not seen any of that money redistributed. What we have seen is rhetoric from mayors like Eric Adams. What we have seen is rhetoric from the establishment of the Democratic Party, who has said, we're gonna go back to our tough on crime days, which the reality is we have still not answered the question of what is gonna take for our communities to feel safe. Our communities as a whole, not just a certain part of our communities, but everybody should feel safe. We should prioritize public safety, but that doesn't mean hiring more police officers on our streets. That's actually giving basic needs for our communities like education, food, work, and more things that our communities need.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm already, like the fact that in the video, he mentions that Patrick might've grabbed the taser. Like I'm already just knowing what conservatives will say. Conservatives who, by the way, will say, if the feds ever come to my door, they better watch out. No, when it's a black man who's about to be murdered, if you do anything wrong, if you don't comply instantaneously, telepathically, with everything being said, everything being designed. If you flinch, yeah. And by the way, even if you do all of those things, many people still die. The disgusting things that they must be saying about this. And I am forcibly not exposing myself to that. But a few more details. The chief, the Grand Rapids Police says that they don't have any, there's no other weapons that were on the scene. This isn't a case where they're saying that Patrick was about to pull his own gun or something like that. They were, if we believe everything that was presented in that video, they were scuffling over a weapon that the cops pretend ain't all that dangerous. So those are the stakes, by the way. And right now there's an investigation of the officer's actions. No charging decision has been made. And so I'm gonna give you a little bit of a spoiler alert about how this works based on my experience covering cases like this. Nothing would have happened if there hadn't been the protest. If the video hadn't come out, literally nothing would have happened. You never would have heard about this again after a day. Even with the protests, even with the video, chances are nothing's going to happen. There will be no charges. Maybe in this era we get charges, but you better hope that people stay invested in this, because if they don't ride out every step of the way, this guy is going to make, he's going to be just fine. Despite turning a routine traffic stop into his decision to end a man's life. Any other thoughts, Selene?
It happens all the time. It happens all the time. And unfortunately, like I don't believe that justice can be served. I mean, for me, justice isn't about putting more people into the carceral state. For me, justice is preventing these things from ever happening. And that should be our country's main priority when it comes to criminal justice. We need to make sure that police cannot just senselessly kill people in our communities for defending themselves. I mean, think about the people, those two white folks in St. Louis that came out with their guns, that picture that will forever be like etched in, it lives in my brain rent-free, unfortunately. But did the police kill them? Did the police do anything forcibly to them? No. This is exactly the different inequities of the world that we live in, and it needs to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. A white man standing with an assault rifle is inherently less threatening than a black man face down on the ground that you have the superior grappling position on.
Right.
Weird how that works time after time after time. We're going to switch things up entirely. Very different sort of consequential issue, but let's launch into this.
But Bill Barr, the attorney general, didn't want to be impeached. They were vicious with him. They said, we're going to impeach him. They didn't even know why, but they were going to impeach Bill Barr. He didn't want to be impeached. How do you not get impeached? You just sit back and relax and wait out for your term to end. And that's what he did. And it was a sad thing and a sad day for our country. Then he writes a crummy book.
How do you not get impeached? Of course, I mean, it's such a routine thing for government officials to just constantly be impeached. How do you not just get impeached? Donald Trump wants you to know. Well, the stakes there are that he is talking about Bill Barr, and he's talking about what he wanted the former attorney general to do to stop the results of the 2020 election from being put into effect. Donald Trump did not want to be booted from the White House, and he wanted the AG to find some way within the law, outside of the law, to stop that from happening, to effectively end democracy. And if that resulted in him being impeached, that was a sacrifice Donald Trump was perfectly willing to make. He goes into more depth on what he wanted Barr to do in this video.
Which was so false. But you know what? Had Bill Barr had the courage, a lot of this could have been taken care of.
Well, I'll say this.
The U.S. attorney in Philadelphia said Bill Barr told him not to investigate the fraud in the elections. And he said, don't do it. And he wrote a letter to that effect. And, you know, it's had Bill Barr had the courage to do what he should have done instead of being worried about being impeached. I said, look, get impeached. I went up a lot in the polls when I got impeached. You have to get impeached, maybe. But he was so afraid of being impeached that he refused to do his job. And that includes on some of the things you're talking about.
Now, just to be clear, the only consideration, the only stakes on you potentially being impeached is what effect it has on your ratings. Obviously, Bill Barr needs better ratings. He should just get impeached. But look, there's some shorthand there that's probably already obvious to you. If he'd had the courage, is what Trump says when he wants someone to break the law, to go against the Constitution, to help him. If only Bill Barr had had the courage to invent voter fraud. That's not about courage, that's about a complete lack of ethics, which generally Bill Barr had demonstrated up until that point. He just wasn't willing to overturn the results of an election. They call that a lack of courage. If Mike Pence had had the courage to stop the certification, there was no place within the Constitution, the way our government works, for him to do that. It has nothing to do with courage, it has to do with the law, with the Constitution that's at the core of our country. But that's the way that Trump is always going to talk about it, Nalini. If only someone had had the courage to overrule the results of the actual vote.
I mean, Donald Trump is kind of a classic reality television villain, right? And he did, and he displayed it as president. He wants loyalty above anything. He wants people to break the law above anything. He doesn't actually care about and never has about the Constitution of the United States. He's cared about himself, what is going to work for him and his cronies. And that is what he's cared about and centered this entire time. What I think is really, really interesting is that we hear over and over again that he was willing to break the law and he wanted other people to break the law, yet he has not been penalized for any of it. Yeah. He actually wasn't really, you know, he wasn't officially impeached so that he couldn't run again, right? He was impeached in the constitutional congressional way, but he wasn't actually removed from office so that he couldn't run again. There hasn't been a case against him just yet. There is definitely folks in his ranks that are being, you know, called in for comment, but he hasn't been called in yet. And it's about time.
Yeah. Yeah, thus far, no consequences. Some ongoing investigations that maybe.
I mean, he's got records at Mar-a-Lago right now. Doesn't he have like a whole box of records at Mar-a-Lago right now?
They might have been recovered. But yeah, like this guy is desperately trying to get you to lock him up and they still won't do it. How many ways can he declare? By the way, this was an interview with Sean Hannity. He didn't have to do the interview. He didn't have to reveal this. He just decided to add a little bit of fuel to the fire. Oh yeah, no, I tried to get my AG. I pressured him to overturn this thing. A weird choice.
Well, unfortunately, his base loves it though. That's the thing, is that his base wants people to have that outsider, right? Kind of like antagonistic to the system, even though the system has perfectly worked well for most of his base. Yeah. So I think it's really important that unfortunately his base wants him to do this, which is why he continues to do so.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, he's going against the system, with the system being the guy he chose to be the AG. So often he's the big man who's going up against his appointees, the people he chose time after time after time. Now, in this case, thankfully, Bill Barr wasn't willing to go this far. A bad guy, by the way. He was chosen because he auditioned on Fox News and reassured Donald Trump that he'd give him mostly whatever he wanted. Remember, in advance of the Mueller report, he put out his pre-report lying about the content of it to shift the narrative before the actual details had come out. This was a bad guy, a Trump loyalist. The only thing he wouldn't do was overturn the results of the election, something he had no power to actually do. But yeah, back in December 2020, just a month after the election, he did an interview revealing that they had found no evidence of widespread fraud, which seems significant, but I'm not a Trump cultist, so I don't know. Anyway, he said he wasn't going to investigate the claims and he eventually resigned. He was pushed out effectively. And it wasn't until quite a bit later when his crummy book, according to Trump, came out, where he rejected the fraud claims. He blamed Trump for the January 6th riot. He said that Trump wasn't fit for office. And by the way, remember that, because in a minute it's going to be relevant, not fit for office. He wrote that Trump surrounded himself with sycophants whack jobs from outside the government who fed him a steady diet of comforting but unsupported conspiracy theories. He said that the absurd lengths Trump took to try to get back into office led to the rioting. But by the way, he did say that if Trump is the Republican nominee in 2024, he's gonna vote for him, despite not being fit for office. Like, if you're voting for them, that is kind of an admission that you think they're fit for office. I don't know. Maybe there's a multiple personality thing going on. Maybe we got a Moon Knight situation. I don't know, Nalini. What do you think?
That is incredible. That is incredible for him to say. You know, he did all these things wrong. He led to an insurrection that almost overthrew the government of the United States. But yeah, he's my homie, so I'll still vote for him in 2024. I mean, this is the lack of coherence that the upper echelons of the Republican Party have at this moment, right? It's like, no, we still believe in the law, but you know what? This guy who continuously breaks the law or wants people to break the law is totally fine leading the free world again, right? Exactly. And we see it time and time again. And so I just think that, I mean, at the end of the day, we need to make sure that more and more people see Trump and his cronies for who they are. They are people who actually do not believe in the Constitution, and they do not believe in what the promise of what America was supposed to be.
Exactly. And those cronies are, in many cases, the new up and coming class of them are far more willing to give Trump what he wants than someone like Bill Barr. Let me give you an example, actually. So Trump not only has been attacking Barr. So Barr is also, by the way, going to vote for him after he's been trashed by Trump in the media. Trump called his book crummy. Anyway, Trump also issued an anti-endorsement in the Pennsylvania gubernatorial race for candidate Bill McSwain, former US attorney in Philadelphia that Trump brought up in the Hannity interview. McSwain last year asked Trump to endorse him. And McSwain said, no, man, it was Barr that stopped me from looking into voter fraud. Well, despite that, Trump put out a statement saying, do not vote for Bill McSwain, a coward who let our country down. He knew what was happening and let it go. It was there for the taking, and he failed so badly. By the way, if you describe your attempt to overturn the results of an election as it was there for the taking, you're saying the quiet part out loud. But anyway, despite the fact that he's anti-endorsing McSwain, all of the candidates in that race on the Republican side are big lie people. They all believe that the election was fraudulent. The two leaders were actually part of his like fake Trump elector scheme. So no matter who you get there, they would have overturned the results of this election. So that's fun, Nalini.
It is. I mean, first of all, I have to say that your Donald Trump impression is amazing. That was actually really good reading. But yeah, I mean, here's what we have. We have people who are willing to fall in line. I think a bunch of folks who I see it as high school sometimes, except they're playing with our lives, where you have a bunch of people who follow the bully. Who follow the bully because out of fear, but also follow the bully because they want to be popular so badly. Yeah. It's like they can't not be popular. So you have all these people who will just fall in line no matter what he says about them. Look at all of the things that Trump has said about Ted Cruz, and Ted Cruz spread the lies about the election as well. So we're just 100%. Seeing a really popular bully be that bully, but unfortunately a leader in this country.
Exactly. I'm going to leave you with one more fun note. If we could jump ahead to this screenshot from the interview, heads of the director. One of the lower thirds caught Asin's eye on Twitter. Lower third says, Donald Trump on Biden families, foreign dealings. And I agree. We should be worried about the foreign dealings of family members of the president, especially if it's big dollars. Like, I don't know, maybe the fact that we found out this week that Saudi Arabia looked into Jared Kushner's request for $2 billion, said it's a joke, it's a terrible bet, but they gave him the $2 billion anyway. Maybe that's worth bringing up, Hannity. What do I know? I'm not on TV. Anyway. With all that said, we do have to go to our first break. But when we come back, we're going to be diving into the Democratic Party, both the Congressional Progressive Caucus, as well as Dianne Feinstein, all that and more after this.
Got out of the longest war in America's history, right? They pouring money, extra money into the defense budget that hasn't even been asked for. But yet we got to beg these people for the president to do something that he has the ultimate authority to do, which is to cancel the damn student debt. Do that right away and stop making all these excuses.
That is, of course, Nina Turner appearing a little bit ago on this program, giving a full-throated defense of Joe Biden actually making good on his campaign promises. And I like to call what you just saw there and the candidate Nina Turner, who's running in Ohio's 11th congressional district primary, a progressive. But what do I know? Because I'm not part of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and apparently they have different ideas, because just this week they released this, a little press release about some of their new endorsements. And by the way, there are many endorsements there, some of them perfectly fine, good progressives. But if you zoom into one of the paragraphs, they have their new slate of CPC incumbent endorsements, and one of them there, not far from Katie Porter, who I like, is Chantel Brown, who is, of course, the candidate who is running against Nina Turner in the same race at the very least. And the idea that she is the most progressive candidate in the race, I find to be an interesting choice. Now, they defend it saying, "We're proud to support and endorse this group of bold progressive leaders that are fighting for working people in their communities and across the country. Each and every one of them is working every day to take on corporate special interests, fight for economic and social justice, universal healthcare, climate action, and bold solutions to the urgent crises facing our country. We are thrilled to support their campaigns and look forward to continuing to build the progressive movement." So these are apparently, according to Mark Pocan, Pramila Jayapal, who we've had on, and I, for the most part, like Jamie Raskin has been on a number of times. I like Jamie Raskin. Is she the most progressive in the race? I get that she's an incumbent, Nalini, but what do you think about this and the CPC weighing in on this race?
Yeah, so the Working Families Party has endorsed Nina Turner because she's the most courageous fighter for working people. And we value the role that the CPC plays in Congress, but we think that they got it wrong here. Well, we know that they got it wrong here because we've endorsed Nina Turner. And we're gonna do everything to make her win. But look, the allies are gonna disagree at a lot of times. And this is why we build broad coalitions. So while we do not agree with the CPC's endorsement of Chantel, we are going to do everything in our power to make sure that Nina Turner wins that race when the primary comes up.
Exactly, yes. And that is very reasonable. I am not, you know, 100% like, if they're not exactly what I would have cooked up in a lab, I will destroy them. That is some people's bag, which makes less strategic sense than it does potentially audience building sense, but I digress. That said, like, it seems like a sure bet that the Democrat who wins this primary is gonna go on to win it. I don't think that that's super disputed. So why not get the stronger progressive? And by the way, I could point out all the ways that I think Nina Turner is a stronger progressive. Indirectly, Nina Turner is gonna do that job too, because she had a few tweets and I just wanted to highlight a few. She said progressives aren't afraid to sign letters urging POTUS to cancel student debt. That's because progressives don't take money from lobbyists, a student loan company. She's not saying anything. She's just saying progressives don't take money from billionaire Trump mega donors. That's not about anybody in particular. She's just saying. Interesting related note, The Intercept recently had a rundown just last year of some of the GOP donors funding Chantel Brown. So, you know, interesting. Anyway. Progressives support abolishing the filibuster. Now, to be fair, Chantel Brown, she does support a carve out specifically for voting rights legislation, but that is hardly an overall change to the filibuster, the sort of structural change we've been talking about. And progressives don't take corporate PAC money. So that is what Nina Turner says. And so these are important things that really tell you about who a candidate is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that here's the thing. I feel like, look, the Congressional Progressive Caucus has been large for quite some time. There are members in that caucus that have had an interesting history, a voting history, and interesting money and donations that I've taken. But look, I think that Nina Turner is right, is that progressive, this is why she's making the case for herself. She is saying that she doesn't take corporate PAC money, that she believes in canceling student loan debt, that she believes in abolishing the filibuster, because that's where the progressive lines are. So we're so excited, and I think it is a missed opportunity for the CPC, but you know, they're gonna do what they're going to do, and we're gonna continue to build a broad coalition and support and win that race. And we're gonna continue to build a working families majority in Congress, which is what we believe that we need to shift the spectrum of what the Democratic Party is talking about in Congress these days.
I agree, yeah. And by the way, I would love to see, like, the CPC, the members are, on average, I would say, are better than most Democrats. But could we have like an actual, like, Could we choose the definition of progressive in our progressive caucus rather than like only it being a comparative thing? Can we get that? The 2024 presidential primary is going to be different than it has been for quite some time. It was announced recently. It is pretty spicy. This could have a big effect. The early primaries are going to be different. So previously you'd had states like Iowa, New Hampshire, a few others that did really early primaries every single time. Well, now the DNC's Rules and Bylaws Committee has voted to allow states to apply to hold an early primary and set dates for them to do so. They will still be choosing through a multi-stage process. And so how this shakes out could be fascinating, but already some states are getting angry about this. Maggie Hassan says New Hampshire has held the first in the nation primary for over 100 years, and that's not going to change. We've defended our primary before and we will do it again. And so then I say, no, but you're bragging that you've had first for 100 years. Could you share? I feel like you're making the case against your point, Maggie. That's long enough. Nalini, what do you think?
I mean, look, things need to change, especially if the disastrous early stage primaries in the 2020 primary election. I feel like I was at the last Iowa caucus ever, maybe. We'll see.
It was a rough one.
It was a rough one, but here's the thing. I think that what we haven't talked about a lot is, and I think people have talked about it, is the diversity. It has angered a lot of people that majority white states go first when our country is more diverse than ever. It also isn't populous states that represent a majority population. Like, what if California went first?
Oh my God.
And then maybe Georgia? Yep. Like, what would happen if California went first? That has a big chunk of the population of the United States and a diverse population of the United States, both socioeconomically and racially. So I think that, you know, I think this is a great opportunity for states to put themselves forward, but it's a great opportunity also to have us not just say that the Democratic Party starts off and you build momentum with the majority white states choosing who gets the momentum.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is good, but it's really going to come down to which ones they choose. And by the way, they're definitely going to be like weighing the political implications. Like, and by the way, not just in which states, but also which states get primaries, which get caucuses. Right. They seem to be poo-pooing the caucuses a little bit. Well, we can think about which sorts of candidates tend to do well in those. So this is something that we are definitely going to be watching as we go forward.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, with that, we have to turn to admittedly kind of uncomfortable territory, starting with this video.
On November 7, President Trump tweeted, and I quote, "I won this election by a lot," end quote. Obviously, that's not true. Do you believe that label goes far enough to prevent the tweet's harms when the tweet is still visible and not accurate? Well, let me give you a specific. On November 7, President Trump tweeted this: "I won this election by a lot." Does that label do enough to prevent the tweet's harms when the tweet is still visible and is not accurate?
So look, that was Senator Dianne Feinstein asking the head of Twitter the same exact question twice and not seeming to understand that she had asked it twice. And that is one of several incidents in recent years that have led people, as well as behind the scenes info from people working with the senator, to think that perhaps she is having a little bit of difficulty in understanding what is going on, expressing herself, organizing her thoughts. Well, that is going to be buttressed by this new report coming out. We saw in the Daily Beast of a number of sources talking about her current difficulties. Four US senators, including three Democrats, as well as three former Feinstein staffers and the California Democratic member of Congress, told the Chronicle in recent interviews that her memory is rapidly deteriorating. They said it appears she can no longer fulfill her job duties without her staff doing much of the work required to represent the nearly 40 million people of California. Bear in mind, she's not just a senator, she's a senator for California. If being a senator is a difficult job, it is particularly difficult when you're in a massive state just like this one. They said that the memory lapses do not appear to be constant, and that some days she is nearly as sharp as she used to be. Yes, the original reporting is Chronicle, just to be clear. Thank you to the producers. But some close to her said that on her most difficult days, she does not seem to fully recognize even longtime colleagues, sometimes she will ask small talk questions in conversations and then ask the same question again because she doesn't remember that she already did. So look, as I said in the run up to this, talking about someone's mental faculties, especially someone who is on the older side, is a very uncomfortable thing. And in many cases, there's been a lot of conspiracy theorizing about these sorts of topics. That said, she is a senator. And this is multiple other elected officials saying that they are worried about her ability to do her job. Nalini, what do you think about this?
Well, yes, I think it's hard to comment on somebody's mental health state or state. But I do think that I don't need that to know that it's time for Dianne Feinstein to go because she doesn't actually represent progressive values. I think a lot of folks remembered when Sunrise Youth confronted her about the Green New Deal and she just shooed them away, didn't want to listen to them, didn't want to listen to young people in her state who were concerned about their futures and climate resiliency. I also am old enough to remember when she hugged Lindsey Graham after the Amy Coney Barrett trials and said this was the best Supreme Court, what was it, trials we had, interviews that we've had and process that we've had. And given what Judge Ketanji Brown just went through, to me, she just doesn't represent the values of Californians. The Californians are really, really progressive. And so that's why for me, it's time for her to go, not necessarily commenting on her mental or health state.
I think that that's a very responsible way to go about it. Like, this is not going to help her. Although we should bear in mind, other elected officials are talking about her potential difficulties. They're trying to, theoretically get out in advance of her running for re-election, which we still don't know exactly what she's going to do.
Right.
It could be that they're doing that because there is some other person they'd like to see be appointed to that spot or run for that spot. Right. We have to bear in mind. They potentially could be biased too, but yeah, Dianne Feinstein is obviously, like, she is representing among the most progressive states in the entire country. Like, shouldn't we thus have one of the best progressives? And we could, there is certainly enough people. I mean, God only knows if the Democratic Party in California would let that happen, the amount of money that would be thrown against them. But this could potentially go to, there could be a in 2024 a race here. Is there anyone that leaps to mind for you as someone who might be more representative of the state that could take Feinstein's position?
Ooh, what an interesting, spicy question. I mean, I think that there are a lot of a new generation of leaders in the state of California. I know that there's a progressive city councilwoman in LA, Nithia, who's been really great. There's a lot of folks in the state legislature as well. There are folks like maybe Ro Khanna, who has been in, a progressive for quite some time. So I just know at the end of the day that Californians are really organized. We've seen that in the 2020 primary. We've seen that with the stuff that has been able to be won in the state. And I fundamentally believe that if a progressive steps up that can do the job and that has the support of community and organizations, they could win.
Yeah. Well, look, I think that there's I imagine Katie Porter would probably make a good run for that. And there's like Barbara Lee, maybe. Like, this was the sort of talk that was going around in the last contested election. But anyway, we're gonna have to see. It's super high stakes. We need a leader, and I think that we deserve one. Anyway, there's more details available. You can go to the Chronicle's reporting if you wanna find out more about this. That said, we are going to take our last break of this first hour. When we come back, a TikToker lays into Greg Abbott on the way that he has shut down the border. You might not have heard that much about this yet, but it's big and consequential, and we'll have the details for you.
I am telling you right now, Republicans are intentionally working to drive up inflation and intentionally working to cripple our supply chain. Why? Because they want to drive up inflation. They think it's going to help them in the midterms. They want to cripple supply chains because they think it will help them in the midterms. They're doing it on purpose to hurt you, your family, your wallet.
That is TikToker Paul in Texas, who has a theory about what Greg Abbott is doing right now that's already causing chaos at the border and could have long-term consequences for the price and availability of a number of different products throughout the country. He gets into his full theory in this video.
Right now, Governor Abbott here in the state of Texas is forcing the DPS, which is our version of the state troopers, to stop every single truck coming out of Mexico. Every single truck. And do a safety inspection on it. What they're doing is they're backing up shipping for dozens and dozens and dozens of miles. Normally, a Mexican driver will bring a truck over across the border. They'll drop it at a depot and an American driver will pick it up and drive off. They usually do about four a day. They can't get one through. They can't get one truck through. They're backed up for miles. Laredo's the largest land port in this country. And they've got it backed up so goddamn far, you can't even see the end of the goddamn line. These are the sorriest in the world. Republicans are traitors. They don't give a who they hurt, who they just so long as they can get some power. I'm telling you, people, vote blue in every election.
Okay, so you can see Paul in Texas on TikTok. Yeah, he has a lot more details about that, including updates. But he is trying to raise awareness about what's happening because it's made sort of limited national news. But it's true. Since last week, commercial vehicles entering Texas have faced not only the usual federal immigration and customs inspections, but new checkpoints set up by Texas police on the roadway immediately after a measure Mr. Abbott said he was ordering in response to the flow of illegal drugs and human trafficking across the border. Delays now stretch up to 14 hours, and some drivers have been diverted to Arizona and New Mexico. They are driving states away rather than wait for this new, suspiciously just a few months out from the election change that Abbott has made. They love to talk about how inflation is really bad and products are getting too expensive and they're not available. You go on the store shelves and the products aren't there. But look at what effect they're actually directly having on that. Nalini, I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. What Republicans do when they're in charge and they want to seem that they will save the day, they change the rules. They literally rig and change the rules. And what we are seeing here is across the country, Republicans are using inflation and Americans' fear of gas prices rising to just say this is the Democrats' problem, when it's really price gouging and folks actually setting up these conditions that are the problem right now. And I think that it's really, really insidious that someone who has not protected his constituencies when the big storms happened last year and people were out of power, out of food, out of resources, to actually have the nerve to say, you know what, inflation's going up and it's the Democrats' problem, when he's the one who's in charge.
Yeah.
He's the one that's in charge of this state. And he's just doing this because he knows Texans are actually upset. And that Paul guy on that video, I need to recruit him to run for office. He's amazing.
Yeah, no, he's doing a good job there and raising awareness about this. Want to give you a little bit more details. The standoff has stoked warnings by trade groups and experts that US grocery shoppers could soon notice shortages on shelves and higher prices. Guarantee if that happens, Fox and Friends is going to cover it. You think they're going to mention what's going on in Texas? I doubt it. Mr. Abbott said that the safety checks were needed to increase oversight, even if state police were not legally authorized to search for migrants or drugs at the checkpoints. So it's not just strategically seems to be designed to hurt as many people as possible. Also, he seems to be admitting that they might not be legally allowed to do what they're doing, but they will proceed regardless. And by the way, in the city of Farr, which is a major international bridge, $12 million in produce is shipped every day to the US. It's been shut down. Now, scores of drivers have set up a blockade of their own in protest over the new inspections. And a similar protest has happened in El Paso. And so here's my question to Fox and Friends and Fox. Hey, trucker protest. They're trying to raise awareness about something that's made it impossible for them to do their jobs. Now, I understand it's not about mandates or vaccines or whatever, but Abbott is making it so that they can't do their job. Stuff could be rotting in those trucks. They're making far less deliveries than they were. When are you gonna send your reporters? When are you gonna profile some of these truckers? Or are they not the right sort of truckers for your interests? Any final thoughts, Nalini?
I mean, this is what happens. We have people who are actually standing up, taking a stand for some injustice that they see that's happening to their lives. And nobody wants to report on it, or people don't want to report on it from the Republican side because they know it won't help their narrative of that. We're just against the Democrats and that's it. Yeah.
About 1 month ago, we told you about Mark Meadows, who had claimed to have been living in a cabin on top of a mountain in North Carolina, even though like that's where he was registered, but there was no evidence that he'd ever actually been there. Now that seemed weird. Well, we're not the only ones who thought that, because he's now being, he's been removed from the voter rolls there, and there's an investigation going on to whether he might have violated the law in registering to vote in a place that he apparently had never lived in. It was a rented mobile home in a Scaly Mountain, sounds nice. Anyway, he voted from there as an absentee in the 2020 presidential election. He has subsequently registered to vote in Virginia, according to neighbors up on Scaly Mountain and the former owner of the property. Deborah Meadows rented and stayed at the mobile home for a few nights, but her husband was never seen there. And you can see he's shipping out. So now you can actually see the listing here if you'd like to live in a place that Mark Meadows claimed to have lived but never actually did. I don't know, maybe that's your thing. Anyway, he is being investigated for the possibility of having committed voter fraud, which is just an amazing ironic twist on this. After all of the claims of voter fraud, all of the fake investigations and the cyber ninjas and all of that, when the actual voter fraud comes out, every single time it seems to be Republicans. And I don't want you to freak out about this, because the cases are so rare that it doesn't really matter that they did this. I mean, it's illegal, but it didn't flip an election or anything. But it's such petty, ironic, like such a petty, ironic twist to this story, Nalini.
It's one of the most pettiest things I've seen in my entire life, because it's always just one or two or three of them. So it's not even enough to overturn a complete election. But it shows to you that they have no actual values, that they have no commitment to what they are actually saying out there. They're doing it because people are concerned about these things. People are concerned about voter fraud because they've been told lies time and time and again. And instead of us all championing for something like the For the People Act that would actually bring more democracy to our elections, we're arguing about voter fraud that is actually being done by the former White House chief of staff. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, and an increasing number of some of their biggest supporters. So we know the Villages, this right. retirement community in Florida. Trump did a whole bunch of his little parades there. Two more people have now been shown to have committed voter fraud there. Charles Barnes, Jay Ketsik. So 164, 163, they've admitted to casting more than one vote during the 2020 election. This is a form of voter fraud, you'll be shocked to find out. A third degree felony that carries a prison term of up to 5 years, to which I say, don't put them in jail for 5 years. It didn't sway an election. It didn't matter. No. To be fair, Barnes has not declared his party affiliation, but Ketsik was a registered Republican during the 2020 election. And it's the Villages, so it's not, I don't think, going too far to speculate that they both might have been Trump voters. And look, take it seriously, give them a warning or whatever, but it wasn't thousands of votes. Let's bear in mind that when the voter fraud, again, when it comes up, it tends to be Republicans, but nobody should be going to jail for 5 years because of this.
No, I mean, nobody should be going to jail. I don't think any amount of time for this. Maybe they need to do some political education classes, like maybe some civics classes. I would like to see that. Like here, civics 101, how the government actually works. Mm-hmm. That could be a form of, you know, actually teaching a teachable moment there. But nobody should be going into jail for such a small petty crime. And at the end of the day, yes, it's always Republicans, and it's not, you know, Shadow Acorn that is registering massive amounts of voters off the rolls and dead people. It is actually people who exist who are committing voter fraud in very small ways, and they should actually get civics lessons. That's my opinion.
I think
give them
point.
All civics lessons.
Well, I have got a great development for you, Nalini. At least in this case, that is one of the things they're gonna have to do. Barnes and Ketsik have to complete 50 hours of community service. They have to attend a 12-week adult civics class called We the People, the Citizen, the Constitution, and they need to get a C- at least. I would like to see Trump actually take that too. We're gonna work on that.
Oh my God.
Anyway, that is unfortunately all the time we have in our first hour. There's a lot more coming up though, so don't go anywhere. Nalini and I'll be back in just a few. Dog Barker's been here for 18 months, named the Mycelium Dragon. Thank you. That says, thanks for everything you do, John, Anna, Jenk, JR, et al. Let's keep fighting fascism because it ain't going away on its own. No, like the Russian push into the west of Ukraine, it is at the very best just regrouping at this point, and we need to stay vigilant against that. Let's see, Tris Dragon says in reference to our first story, it happened April 4th and it's now just being talked about. Well, as a result of the protests and the video, really. So thank God for that.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.